This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more at robertaspizza.com.
Join Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe, taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Tickets available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
Welcome to The Line. I'm your host, Eli Sussman, owner and chef of Samisa Restaurant, located in Williamsburg. Many chefs have benefited from parents and grandparents that were excellent home cooks. Being in the kitchen as a child, standing at the knees of adults, is a powerful way to gain experience with how to behave safely around heat and knives while learning to combine flavors and execute recipes. But being a chef and restaurant owner is so much more than cooking food that tastes delicious and that can be reproduced countless times. Owning a restaurant is about staffing, insurance, hospitality, fixing broken items, and dozens of other small tasks that occupy a small business owner's day-to-day. As powerful the knowledge may be of your grandparents' secret recipes, they never had to field negative Yelp reviews and worry about the health inspectors coming during dinner service on a Saturday. My guest today has the best of both worlds. His mother, Ann Bognar, opened up Nippon Tay over 17 years ago in St. Louis. Anne began working at her family's restaurant, Mani Thai, and wanted to bring the flavors of Japan and Thailand together in one restaurant. Nippon Tay became one of the first fusion restaurants in the St. Louis area. The growing restaurant group now encompasses four restaurants. My guest today is Nick Bognar, who is the chef and owner of Indo, the modern Asian restaurant located in St. Louis. Indo combines styles of mainland Southeast Asia, joining Nick's Thai background and formal Japanese training. At just 27, Nick was nominated for the James Beard Foundation Rising Star Chef of the Year for his transformation of his family's restaurant. He opened Indo in June 2019. In a 4-star review in the St. Louis Dispatch, the critic said, "He is staking his claim as one of the most vital voices in St. Louis dining." Chef, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So let's start with a sort of a big overarching geography question. Indo covers a lot of ground from a culinary standpoint. So for those that are not familiar with the area, explain what countries and areas we're talking about and what kind of flavor profile you work with.
I usually like to say Southeast Asia, Thailand, Vietnam, Malaysia. Flavor-wise, that's kind of just the stuff that I started doing mainly probably just because of the food that my family's always made. So it kind of just kind of felt right for me to cook that. And then like trying to kind of think about the restaurant before we opened, I found myself just like for like almost a solid year cooking like mainly Thai food, cooking mainly Southeast Asian food, even though for like the last 12 years, I've been just making sushi professionally. So it's like sushi chef by day and then like Thai home cook by night. And then just kind of like combining that in a way, and like once we opened the restaurant.
Take us back to your childhood. What are some of those smells and spices that permeated both your home and your restaurant life? And also, was there like a clear delineation between home and restaurant, or did it all just kind of blend together?
I mean, I think back in the day, like, so my mom's been working in the restaurant industry far before she ever opened anything, or even her family. So like, it was always kind of like that classic like Asian restaurant family where like your home fridge was a little empty because mom's been working a lot this week. And then like we're just kind of like eating fried rice from the restaurant. I feel like smells wise. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned smells because I mean, my whole life growing up like in St. Louis, Missouri, like my house definitely smelled a lot different than like everybody else's. So you like walk in and you're immediately blasted with like fish sauce. And my grandma's in there just like pounding things together that smell funny. But then when I smell that same thing, typically I know that I'm like, so I like went into Hanoi soup shop yesterday and like I smelled that same like fish sauce pungent. And I'm just like, I know this is going to be super good. Reminded me of like, you know, being like So my grandma kind of like watched me a lot before I went to like kindergarten. And that smell, like, just like she was just constantly cooking. I mean, that was like her thing. So, you know, you get that like funky fish sauce and spices and curry, you know. I think a lot of like maybe like Indian people have that same kind of thing where it's like, oh, your house smells like curry. My house always smelled like fish sauce, I guess. I don't know if that's like a good thing.
So what was that like growing up in St. Louis? I'm not super familiar with the composition of the city and its diversity, but were you one of the few families in that area who would have been, had come over from that area, or was there a huge immigrant population that lived in St. Louis that you kind of found your community there?
There's definitely a nice like Thai community, but it's small, you know, it's small. I think we kind of all know each other in a way, but a lot of successful Thai people with their businesses too, because, you know, a few other families have restaurants too. And like, there just wasn't much Thai food. When I was younger, it was definitely like a little bit of a different person just because I was Asian. Like, not a ton of Asian people in St. Louis. But, you know, I think nowadays, like, the knowledge of, like, Asian food is much better. You know, it was cool. I always kind of remember, like, that classic, like, the first time I had lunch at school and, like, nobody knows what the hell I'm eating. And, like, people, like, judging me and then me trying to, like, trade my amazing lunch for, like, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Like, and I always loved, like, Midwest like crappy food because it was different from what I always ate.
Yeah.
So I mean, there was all that classic like trying to fit in yet still, but now it's like, now it's cool to be different, right? Like
I think it would be very cool to bring like a traditional set lunch, you know, I mean, like if you were bringing someone like, you know, a Japanese bento box, giving it to your kid for lunch, that would kill in the lunchroom.
Well, my mom was just hooking me up. Like, I would go to lunch with, like, I mean, once she opened Nippon Tab, I'd be, like, at school with, like, sushi, man. And nobody's, like, people are, like, what is that? Like, nobody wants to eat it. And I'm over here just, like, you know, it's probably, like, a $60 lunch, man. And
like, these third graders are, like, exactly. Is that raw fish? Yeah. They got Lunchables.
Totally.
And you're getting, like, your full omakase.
And I'm just over here, like, jealous of the Lunchable.
Yeah. I think that's, like, a very traditional way to grow up. That is, the unknown is fearful to others.
Yeah, totally.
And you're always looking to be more aligned with what the sort of the traditional path of like the American school child is, like pizza, hamburgers.
Yeah.
Please let me have that as my childhood.
Yeah. Well, what ends up with me now is that I just love all that shit. Like, I eat more pizza and hamburgers than probably anybody, unfortunately.
Is your St. Louis childhood filled with both the food of your family and of the restaurant and also like barbecue and fast food? Like, were you allowed to have that type of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up not really eating that much fast food. Mm-hmm. And then St. Louis is it's like a pretty spread like metro area, right? So we all have cars, right? We drive around everywhere. So as soon as I had like a car and I was 16, we were just like going to fast food all the time. And I felt like it was just like out of control. Like, but yeah, like my mom never really, we didn't really eat that much fast food. The cool thing about it is too, is like, I think seeing how everything changed in the last like 20 years, like going from where it was so hard to find any kind of Asian food, now people just can't even get enough of it. So it's like really helpful for me.
Were you proud or embarrassed or something in the middle of your family's business growing up? Was it cool when you were a kid to have a family business be a restaurant?
I think like outwardly, and I maybe didn't realize this like as a younger person, but outwardly, I think people thought it was really cool. And a lot of people would come and be like, yeah, no, you were going to go to Nick's restaurant. A lot of cool people I knew from school or like people, they would come check it out just because they knew me. And then they themselves would be really excited about it. But I think up until like being like 18, I was almost like a little embarrassed of the whole thing. I don't know why. Maybe it was because like, oh, like I'm not going to be able to go hang out tonight. I'm going to go to work or I'm going to go help out at the restaurant. And being like slightly mad about it, but then eventually getting to that point where I just kind of embraced it.
Did you always think that the restaurant was going to be the path for you when you were like a young teenager, 14, 15, 16, and then when you had to start making a decision about what the next stage would be after high school, did you have other passions that you thought might pull you away from the restaurant?
I don't think I ever really found like another passion that was as strong as cooking. But I definitely didn't take it that seriously, 15, 16. I mean, I was like a line cook then, which was, you know, looking back was like great for my development as being a chef. Because I kind of like banged out all the fundamentals really early. Like my mom was, you know, if I was going to work at the restaurant, she's going to treat me the same. So I definitely still had to cut the onions as fast as so-and-so who I'm working with and try to be helpful. And there was still definitely like a stigma, like, okay, the owner's son is working with us today. So like, in a way, like you could tell that some people maybe weren't super happy about that. And then me trying to like kind of overcome that and prove to them like, hey, I can actually help you as much as another line cook. And then trying to turn that into, okay, hey, you know, some of the older mentors that I worked with doing sushi, like, hey, like, I'm going to show you how to cut salmon, Nick, you know what I mean? And then trying to like kind of prove to them that I was worth the time. So, you know, that kind of started off early. I think I started taking it really seriously when I was about 18 years old and I, you know, I finished high school and it was kind of like, are you going to go to college or are you going to go do, you know, what are you going to go do? And for me, it was like, I had been working a lot then, you know, 17, 18, I was doing sushi, like as a line cook, basically, maybe not 100% full time, but a decent amount. And there was this one week where I was actually in like a high school culinary program at the time. So like half my day was like doing some catering. So there was this one week where my teacher pulled me out of my normal school to just do like catering. And then we had like three of these huge caterings that week. And then my mom had somebody like call out or was sick. So I worked like the entire week. Like I think I worked like 50 hours or something. And I was like, dude, I really love this week. I like this way better than going to school. And at that point, it was something like clicked in my head. Okay, if I like being at the restaurant and I can kind of be happy doing all this stuff and enjoy it. And then actually, you know, like the money for me at the time was like pretty good for my age. I was like, I think I could really like make this my thing. And then I kind of started slowly making it more serious, taking culinary school a lot more seriously. And it was like the first time I got all A's is like culinary school, right? So then I went to like a local community college for culinary. They actually have a really great reputation, Forest Park Community College. And I was just pushing really hard to like learn from the chefs there and get as much info as I could. And a lot of them had a lot of hope for me and they kind of tried to motivate me because they knew like that I had been working for so long. And they were like, yeah, you just got to make sure you know, you push yourself and you try to be an owner, not a line cook forever and stuff like that. And yeah, I still like that, like kind of wild, like 18 to 23, like where I didn't really take, I mean, I kind of just like partied a lot too at that time, but I was still kind of like cooking hard that whole time too. So after that, it was just like obvious that I like spending my time in the restaurant. I'm just going to kind of try to get better and better and better. And then I started taking it really serious right before I moved to Austin.
Right. So you graduate culinary school, but then you do go back to the family business for a little bit before going to Austin, right? And so you kind of spend some time back at the restaurant. You've got all these fundamentals that you can put into effect in the family business. And then when you decide to go to Austin, which comes first, the location or the restaurant? You end up working for Tyson Cole there.
Yeah,
did you seek out Uchiko or was it... did it come together once you were on the ground there?
I mean, I was actually just talking about this just now. Like, I was actually looking pretty hard to actually maybe move to New York because for me, it was always just kind of like dream of mine. And it was funny, sure. Like, it was like the terrible goal, life goal of being a line cook in New York was like my number one thing. I was like, what a bad dream.
Yeah, it's like the beautiful weather and culture of Austin where you can share a bedroom with three other people and be a line cook.
Yeah,
in
and
New
that's
York.
The funny is like, I didn't even want to be like a chef either. I was like, I just want to be a cool line cook. Like, I thought that was cool. No, I was looking a lot all over. One of my best friends from St. Louis actually moved to Austin because his brother had moved to Austin. And he's like, I'm working at this amazing restaurant, Uchiko. I think you should work here. And that was kind of when I first started really looking into what Uchi did. And then I was like, wow, this is insane. And at the time, Uchiko was just coming off of Paul Key winning Top Chef. And I didn't even really connect the dots. I mean, I've always been kind of a fan of that TV show too. So when I saw that, I was like, I'm just going to go here. It seems like they just produce like the best people. So, you know, I kind of thought of it as my like post associate's degree, like more knowledge, more pushing. So I was like, I literally got my graduation papers from culinary school because I was like still finishing classes and like didn't even go pick up my diploma and just like moved to Austin. So it was pretty cool.
Did that place give you everything that you had hoped?
Yeah. Like, even if, like, during the time there, I didn't really realize it because it was just very hard and serious. And it was like, okay, like, you know, they knew all about my career thus far. And it was kind of like, okay, you've been working for your mom. Like, they were almost, I think, in a way, pushing me as hard as they could to see if I could kind of break out of that kind of family tree of restaurants and stuff. And it's like that classic, like, very serious restaurant. And I learned to be a professional chef, I think, at Uchiko, whereas before I was maybe more of like a feel it out kind of chef. And that was the first time I learned like real proper efficiency, you know, like you got to get there and you can't really, you're not allowed to be there all morning. You know what I mean? Because that's just not allowed. So it's like, you better get your stuff done quickly and like very well. And I remember being, after leaving, like being super thankful for all that because I learned to basically just like prep harder than anybody and be able to do, you know, all these different advanced components. And they expected you to be able to make a sauce without having to explain it. They expected you to be able to make a puree without having to explain it. And that was kind of the first time somebody was like, you know, holding you to that standard of, you know, some of the best fine dining around. So it was definitely a big kick in the ass at that point.
Was that place a recipe book place or was it just a dictating, like, now you make the X sauce
yeah,
for such a
it was
a
definitely
dish.
Dictating.
Okay.
So it was like...
So did you keep a notebook with you
yeah.
and like you just wrote down everything and
yes,
prayed to God
exactly.
that you got it right?
And it was like, chef, could you explain how to make the Vichy sauce? And he's just like, oh, again? All right. And then like you get like 5 minutes of his time and then you got to make it.
Right.
But that made me better at cooking because I think the point that they came across to me after being there for a while and really starting to like be able to hold it down a little bit was like, don't think about the specifics too much. Just cook it really nice, you know, make a very beautiful sauce and you're not going to make it the same every time. You're going to have to understand that's like, oh, it's a little thick. It's a little loose. It's a little, you know, is it green? You know, is it really nicely green? And just kind of... First time you kind of like show that to the chef and then he's like, yeah, that's perfect. It's like, yes, I did it. I did it too. Like I didn't just copy something.
After that, you went to be the executive chef at a restaurant in Cincinnati, right?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
that was EO Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been your first time leading a kitchen, right?
Yeah. Outside of my family's restaurant. So I, you know, that was kind of the point too, right? Like try to be a leader instead of just like a cook.
Did you run up against any roadblocks, things that you weren't ready for? The thing is that you've had so much more of like a fundamentals background than mm-hmm. most people get. Even before you ended up in Austin, you had more hours on mm-hmm. the line than most people. You had a mentor who could be pretty honest with you mm-hmm. and you'd probably been able to see a lot of the background, but did that prepare you to be a executive chef and a leader in a restaurant in a totally different city where you're really for the first time you were really like standing on your own in that job?
Yeah, I think at first they kind of like, I mean, I was kind of like feeling a little comfy because it was like I was mainly just manning the sushi bar, so I was like executive sushi chef, which mm-hmm. wasn't a ton of people working for me, but you know, speaking of roadblocks, I think I kind of hit like every roadblock possible at that point. You know, I mean, is anybody really ready to like manage anyone before they actually manage for real? Like, cause you know, before it's like, I'm my mom's kid. If there's something wrong, I just like, hey mom, like this is going on. And then we always have like an answer for it. And then this was like kind of figured out for myself. Luckily, I think I tried to kind of channel her lessons or see how she used to do it. And I kind of made it happen over a while, but it was like a huge learning curve. Like I probably, when I first started with that, I think I kind of like sucked at the job. Like I was definitely mediocre at leading a team and I would maybe like be mean to some staff member instead of just like being a good leader and like helping them and teaching and stuff like that. Because I came from kind of a place where it was more serious and like everybody was professional. It's like, realize that not everybody's going to be like on the same goals that you have and not have the same like thing. And it's, you know, for some people it's a job and they have other things outside of life. So it was like learning how to compromise with people, learning how to work with people for real. I think it's kind of one of the hardest jobs, right? Like what is this person want out of this job? And can I kind of make them happy at the same time, make myself happy? So yeah, I mean like learning to manage, that was like a great lesson for me. I learned a ton of new things like how to work with ownership who's not necessarily restaurant minded. You know, my mom has been a chef her whole life basically, and working with her about food is much easier than when you go to another owner who's not really worried about how good the food is, more worried about like what costs, how much it costs and stuff like that. So I learned a whole new set of like lessons there.
Yeah, I think you touched on such an interesting part of what being a chef and a leader in a restaurant can be, which is figuring out what each individual wants out of the job, not necessarily first what you can get out of that individual. Totally. Because you're right, at a place like Uchiko or somewhere very fancy, high-end, almost everybody there is going to be pursuing a career path.
Yes.
But at other restaurants, maybe not necessarily. Mm-hmm. You might have people that this is a stop along their way, and they might punch in and punch out, literally and figuratively and mentally. And finding that kind of balance can be really challenging. Did you, at that time, did you make a lot of phone calls back to either St. Louis or Austin try to like figure out what your weekly, daily strategy would be?
I mean, I had my kind of like my close friends that I met after working in Austin. And then, but I mean, there was probably like twice a week I was calling my mom and dad just like, you know, this guy doesn't care about how the food tastes or whatever. And it's just like, I don't think it's good. And a lot of that stuff I was right about, but it didn't really, you know, being right about say like, oh, this food's not as good as it could be, is kind of like a minute detail when it comes to like running a whole business, you know, like at, and I learned too, is like people like going to EO Kitchen because it's a nice restaurant. Very like, it's a fun place to be. The drinks were great. It was a very beautiful place. And I kind of learned this whole other aspect too, because my family's restaurants are very food forward, very like, it's about the food. It's less about the atmosphere or the location. And I started to learn like restaurant experience is a complete thing, you know? So one of the biggest things that my parents were telling me too is like, how bad is it? You know, like I'm super obsessed with this one dish and it's just bothering me. And I'm just like so upset that I have to serve it. But when it comes down to it, it's like, is the restaurant operating? You know, are people happy when they leave? Do you have a job? Are you getting paid? Things like that, I think, kind of put it into perspective and it started to help me with, you know, logically thinking, is everything okay? You know, and it's like young man, like kind of high anxiety, like don't want to be too stressed, like, but you know, kind of like coming to terms with all of that at the same time.
So when you spend some time at the restaurant in Cincinnati, and then after that, you decide to go traveling abroad, right?
Yeah. E&O had been, in my opinion, was doing like kind of well by then. I feel like I had kind of learned all those lessons. I had a nice sushi team. I had a nice team there. My friend was the chef. Like, you know, we had gone through so many different chefs. And finally, the guy I liked the most was the other chef for the kitchen side. And we were both having fun. But at the same time, I started to get a little bit like maybe just bored of the food, I guess, is what it comes down to. And we all kind of sat and it was like, I think the food of that restaurant is what it is, and that's what it's going to be. And there's nothing wrong with that. The place is still a great experience, you know. But I was, like, ready to do more of what I had done prior to E&O, and I wanted to make more, I guess, just, like, better sushi in general. And so I had talked to my parents, and I was like, okay, I think we're going to move back to St. Louis because my mom was, like, super open to just renovating Nippon Te. So when I first moved back, I spent a lot of time, like, learning about what was already going on. And we were taking some time to see about how we wanted to change everything. And then part of that was like, let's go to Thailand again. So I got to spend a lot of time. I went for a long time actually, which was great. So my uncle has a place in Bangkok. And so I stayed with him and then I got to kind of like bounce around. Got to meet one of my best friends while I was in Thailand, who's also a chef. And we both just ate a ton. We went to Cambodia, you know, we just drove around Thailand and ate everywhere. Basically.
Do you have any family there that works in the restaurant industry?
Actually, no.
Okay.
My uncle, he actually has a pork like factory basically. And that's kind of his main thing now. So he's kind of a businessman, but he loves food. So it was kind of cool. I felt like I had like one of the best guides
ever. Got a good tour.
Yeah. Because he took me to all the best, like Kalmangai restaurants or these little cool hole in the wall spots. And then we went to some nice restaurants too that he likes as well.
And how long did you spend?
I want to say like 2.5 months I was there. So that was great. Like, I mean, it feels like no time now, but man, I was there for a while, which was cool too.
Was it really like a full on fact finding mission? Like at every meal, were you thinking to yourself, maybe this can be something that I can integrate back into the menu? Were you just looking for inspiration at a top line level, or were you actually trying to dig deep into dishes that you could maybe reproduce or reimagine?
I think it's hard to say, like, you were just like going after specifics while you're traveling, you know, like I definitely wrote some things down while I was there, but I wasn't like going after like, how am I going to make this dish, you know, but just like bring kind of like absorbing everything, you know, like traveling here too, it's the same thing. Like I think it'd be like a bad idea to just sit there and say like, I'm going to try to make this dish exactly how it is, but like try to take from what they're doing. We just like, you know, when I was there, I was like, if I eat at as many places I could possibly eat at that are all really good, those flavors and those standards will become like my reaction to, or my new standard for that food, right? So now when I try curry or when I try khao soi or when I try all these other Thai dishes that I had there, I was like, this isn't as good as what I had in Chiang Mai, or this wasn't as good as what I had at that little Khao Man Gai shop. So I think that's where it really comes down to. And then also too, it's cool because trying not to be too literal about it and putting my own almost like Midwest kind of flavor profile, which isn't necessarily making it like less good, but just kind of the right amount of like maybe spiciness or the right amount of like funkiness that kind of makes things a little easier for people where I'm from to kind of palate. Because at the end, I'm still from St. Louis too. And I still like, you know, sometimes I like sweeter dishes compared to what they do in Thailand, or something that's not too like funky or too fishy. And I think that's kind of part of the success of it too. And kind of just being who I am instead of like what you're supposed to be if you're going to make like authentic Thai food. What's that supposed to taste like?
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about taking that flavor and transferring it back to St. Louis. Stick with us here on The Line. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com. And fall asleep just to wake up.
Welcome back to The Line. I'm your host, Eli Sussman. My guest today is Chef Nick Bognar. He is the chef and owner of Indo, the modern Asian restaurant located in St. Louis. Indo combines styles of mainland Southeast Asia, joining Nick's Thai background and formal Japanese training. He's been nominated for a James Beard Foundation Rising Star, and he came back to St. Louis after working in Austin and Cincinnati and rejoined his family restaurant to revamp it. And then very recently, he's opened his own shop. Before we start talking about Indo, which is what I want to spend the most of the time on in the second half, when you came back to St. Louis to open, reopen Nippon Te, mm-hmm. What did that consist of? It had already been open and it had been around for 15 or so years point. So it feels like kind of a tall order. It's a neighborhood restaurant mm-hmm. that like is very well established. Mm-hmm. What did you change? What did you not change? And was there any tension amongst family of like, hey, Nick, we get that you have this like huge chef pedigree now, but ...
Yeah, yeah, definitely. No, you nailed it, man. Like, it was, you know, when I first moved back, my mom was like, I think we should do some of the stuff that you've been doing. Like, I think that would be exciting, and that's what we should do. So that was kind of the first initial, like, become partners for real, and then try to do what I think is right for the restaurant. But, like, you know, like you said, man, it's like, it's an established restaurant. So I immediately was kind of like, this is going to be harder than opening probably something new, because you have an entire group of people who like it for what it is. And maybe there's a whole new group of people out there that you could grab and try to get to come to the restaurant. But, like, how are you going to kind of get them excited about some new things? So it was like kind of like a full year long process. And, you know, like running restaurants, you probably understand, it's like, first you have to get better people too, because you have a lot of people who are used to what they have been doing, and that workload is completely different than what I want to get it to. Right. So at first it was like, yeah, you guys can't, like, do this. This is not the right way to process this fish, or this is not the right way to do that. And that would piss off just staff. Right. Cause they're like, who, like, you know, and then it was still that same thing. It's like the owner's son, you know, there's a lot of, like, internal, before we even really changed anything to, like, the guest's perspective, there's a lot of internal, like, I don't really want to do what this guy says. Right. And I even had to maybe let some people go, or they just decided, I think mainly most people were like, this isn't for me anymore. And they kind of moved on, and that's fine. But yeah, like, the first 6 months was just like about getting some, like, good people and trying to search out for that. But then, you know, there's a lot of legwork on my own when I first moved back, like, just be there myself. And if I want something to be better, like, can't really just ask somebody else to do it. I'm just going to have to do it myself. Right. So, like, first it was just about improving ingredients. They were in that kind of classic sushi bar where you have, like, a ton of rolls, and a lot of that product wasn't as necessarily, like, as high end as I would have liked it to be. So first thing I did was, like, what rolls are made with things that I don't approve of? And then we just kind of, like, pulled the Band-Aid as get rid of that stuff. And then that immediately kind of reverbed to a lot of guests. Like, the loudest guests, I think, were the ones kind of telling us, like, this is bad. I want my role that you used to have. And I'm like, sorry, I just don't believe in that frozen product anymore. And I just decided to take it off the menu. And it was hard to kind of see if you were doing the right thing, because you would get a lot of people complaining, but then you would also get a lot of new customers who would come in and they'd be like, this was great. This was much better. But those people are, like, quieter than the people who are mad.
Of course. Right?
Yeah. And then you have the kind of internal family business thing where I think my parents, they definitely supported me. Like, my parents have always supported me with what I wanted to do, which is amazing. And but then there's the reality of it, which is, like, you're spending more money on fish. You're spending more money on equipment. You got some new stuff. You spent a bunch of money. And, like, where's the benefit, you know? And a lot of my friends who are chefs in other cities ask me about St. Louis's scene. And I always kind of talk about it. It's like, I think it's emerging and I think it's popping off right now, but it's kind of slow, right? So you change something at your restaurant, it's going to take, like, a few months for people to even pick up on it, because it's not like New York where you have thousands of people walking in front of your restaurant every day. Like, if they want to come, they have to drive to the restaurant and they have to know where they're going, because it's not really, like, foot traffic. So kind of trying to see is, like, okay, we have to just kind of do this all the way and try, because at first we tried to kind of compromise, and it was like, take a few things off the menu, keep some of those popular items, and keep trying to do semi what we were doing, and then also have this other thing on top of it. And then eventually realize we just need to change the entire menu, and we just need to change everything.
It's really crazy that you took, you know, the old saying, if it ain't broke, don't, you know, and what you did was you just said, it's not good enough for me.
Yeah.
Like, and it was good enough for the customer in a way.
In a way,
people that were satisfied, but mm-hmm. you were just looking to execute things at a much higher level. And by going to those purveyors and finding mm-hmm. all this new product and finding new ways to innovate, my wonder is, why not keep Nippon-Te exactly how it was and just open up the other place right away?
Yeah, exactly.
Why did you come back to Nippon-Te first?
Well, you know, a restaurant being open for that long, in a way, you benefit from that too, right? So there's not a lot of expenses as it was when you first opened it. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, I'm sure everybody knows now, if you try to open a restaurant, it's going to cost you, like, $1 million, you know? And it's like, I don't have $1 million. So we're going to do what we can. And then we're going to build to that point where maybe we can open something new. And I always have to give credit to my mom for that first initial decision, because this is her restaurant. This is her baby. And it's almost as old as I am, right? So it's like her kid. And so many props to have like an owner who thinks about food in a way to see in the future before things are old and done. Mm-hmm. And to say like, you know, she went out and she used to come visit me and see all these places that we were eating. We would eat together at other restaurants. And I, you know, props for the restaurateur who can sit there and say, like, what I'm doing is okay. What I want to do is the next best thing, the best thing, and get ahead of like the trends. Right. So when she said like, okay, let's do it. I mean, you can't ever discredit how much like weight that has, because you like you said, you could just kind of ride this out for another 10 years and probably be okay. So we just had to rip the Band-Aid, you know, and we lost a lot of people. I got a lot of hate mail, which was kind of crazy. It was like little restaurant in kind of not really like the most popular location in St. Louis. And yet people are that passionate to like send me hate mail. And you know that old saying is like, if you got haters, you're probably doing something right. Right. And now I kind of believe that.
Totally. I mean, if there were that many people that were passionate about and you're still open, you obviously converted some and you won many more over. So there were definitely some dishes there that absolutely like they had to go.
Oh, dude,
I imagine that there was some fighting about, just generally beyond the menu, just also service style or interiors. Oh, yeah. You had probably done a lot more traveling and also kind of high-end eating, I assume, than a lot of other people that were involved in the restaurant. Like you were in Austin, big dining scene, course, and then you had done some traveling. You come back with these new ideas. Did you implement anything beyond the food that was like a drastic change that may have been controversial a little bit for St. Louis?
I mean, Nippon-Te was it. I mean, when I first moved back, we were still using like a sushi checklist, you know, and like you go into a sushi bar and you check off the rolls and pieces that you like, and like we got rid of that, and then we tried to push the whole shared food. So like, I think the most fun thing to do when you go out to eat is to share everything and try as much as you can.
Yeah.
And I think in New York, that's like a normal template for people to eat. But there was a lot of like kind of back and forth with that, because, you know, some people walk in and they're just like, I'm just going to have my roll and I don't want to share with anybody. And so we kind of flipped that service style. But then there was like, you know, it's just a ton of little things. Like doing that all at once really is what it comes down to. I think it was a little too much for some people. And yeah, there were servers who didn't like that either, because their job used to be just like, yeah, give me your checklist. Can I get you any drinks or whatever? And then it became like, hey, you know,
Yeah,
exactly. Everything's meant to be shared. Can I explain some things? Yeah. Sell at the table, which is just, you know, so me without like a true general manager at the time, like was really pushing food knowledge. And I thought through food knowledge, I could hopefully just, the servers will be so good at knowing the food that they could hopefully just explain that to the table. And that's kind of the first step. And then I brought in my best friend who I actually worked with at Uchiko, and he was, you know, I was really happy to help me for about half a year and just be my main point guy in the front. So kind of like our secret weapon, you know, me and him have always seen eye to eye on food, and we knew that we could do it. So a lot of the help in that front of house was to him, and I appreciate that a lot. But yeah, man, it was just like so many different things. And like, we really did spend about a year just kind of flipping the restaurant. And then by the end of that year, I had way better team of chefs and cooks, and then a way happier team, because we were so proud of what we were cooking now, whether we weren't super busy or not yet. And like I said, like time kind of moves a little slowly in St. Louis. So there was like a couple months there where we had changed the menu. We had received a lot of hate mail. We were getting a lot of people telling us that we were never going to be good anymore or something like that. And then I had spent a lot of money and almost double on fish, right? Because I was trying to get fresh fish from Japan, like flown in, all that stuff. We kind of fly a lot of stuff in through Chicago. And my mom and dad, and that's the point, is like everybody else can be mad at me, but you know, mom and dad's opinion is the one that really matters, right? So when they came to me 1 month and they're like, is this okay, like, are we good? And there was a lot of tension there. Like, I don't know if this is going to work, right? And, you know, money was very tight that month. And it was almost like, thank you so much for getting this. Like, we got re-reviewed by the main food critic. And it was like, if that didn't come for another 2 or 3 months, I'm not exactly sure how that would have ended up. I really couldn't even tell you. Like, maybe we would have kept trying, or maybe we would have reverted back or something. But luckily, he came in and was just like, this is some of the best sushi now. And after that, it was like flipping the switch on because so many new people came. And then I think we just kind of retained those new people. And then the word started spreading. And the next thing you know, we're like getting food bloggers and pictures and social media is lit up. And it just kind of like happened in like probably the span of like a 4-month period until that James Beard semifinalist nom. It was just like, holy shit, like we're super busy now.
It all happened so quickly, but everyone doesn't know what happened behind the scenes, which is for over a year, building up to that point. Yeah. And then everything comes together. All the hard work leads to someone recognizing it. And then there's just this great kind of trickle down effect. Yeah. So when you were able to turn that corner and things start really becoming positive, not just internally, but externally as well. And from a press and a customer perspective, is that when you made the decision, okay, I have this other dream. I have a little twinkle in my eye for another spot down the block. How did you find the location for your new restaurant? Did you pitch it to your parents? And how did you sort of fundraise for it?
So yeah,
how did all of it come about?
It was kind of natural in a way. I think with Nippon Tei, my parents didn't necessarily expect me to just kind of stay there and be the chef there. And we all had talked, like, I think we're going to try to find a new spot for me to do kind of this food all the way. Cause you know, there's still a bit of compromise there at Nippon Tei, and it is a concept. So you can't really just push past the concept completely. So that entire time we had kind of our ears open and eyes open for, locations. And I think like getting the word out with, James Beard and then all the local press, made people more interested in helping us find a location. And so I met my landlord, Ben Paremba, who has amazing restaurants in St. Louis as well. And he was kind of helping me find spots. And he had this building across the street from his own place. And there was a restaurant there before us. And they kind of had a little short-lived time. And when they ended up closing, he came to me first, luckily, because it was a very sought-after location. And it was just kind of like knowing him that got me in there, because it was, you know, essentially a new restaurant. And we're like, well, we got to do this. It's like perfect little 50-seater, or not even 50 seats, 46 seats, and ready for us to kind of move in and do, like, you know, so we just put our own equipment in there. You know, we have great business relationships with a lot of the old school hospitality companies in St. Louis because of, you know, my mom's old restaurant. So like equipment, you know, credit, everything pretty much on credit. And we just like, we're like, hopefully we're busy out the gate because we owe these people a lot of money. But it's a small spot, right? So we had done small spots before and we knew that we were capable. And it was just a matter of, you know, kind of hyping everything up.
Did you take on outside investment for this project?
No, we actually were able to do it all ourselves.
So it's still,
and it was almost a no brainer.
It's basically like, it's an extension of the family restaurant group,
exactly,
right?
Yeah,
it's part of, so all of the places are kind of held under the same umbrella, but in the new spot, you have full creative control.
Yeah. I mean,
it's your restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
Now.
Yes. So partnering with my parents and then them saying like, you're going to take point on this as the owner. So yeah, of course their support is always there to help me and a lot of the back end stuff and credit stuff. And my dad was an accountant for many years, so that's really a nice clutch, like to have a very trusted accountant.
Your parents are like the perfect mentorship, ownership partner.
Very
team.
Much so, because you have my dad, who's like a business veteran, you know, working for major companies, and then my mom, who's just been a manager operations person for so long, and then like learning from both of them, and then trying to get myself organized for how to do this, and then, I mean, it was kind of perfect, man. It's like every chef's kind of dream in a way. If you're like really just trying to make creative food, you don't want too big of a spot and you don't want too small of a spot. And it's just kind of exactly what we needed.
When you slid over to your new spot, did your mom kind of retake over at Nippon Tei?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Okay, so now she's back day to day there.
Yeah,
and,
so she's
kind of at Indo.
Yeah, so she's kind of GMing. She GM'd Nippon like kind of interim.
Mm-hmm.
And right now it's kind of exciting time for the whole company because we're kind of restructuring management across the board now. So I think the next goal for us now is to kind of get mom off of hard work and just what she wants to do.
Yeah.
Right. So.
How many people across all the restaurants?
Oh, that's a great question. Wow. I want to say we have probably about 70 employees now. 60.
Okay.
60.
Pretty good size. Yeah. Definitely at the point where, you know, you need some of those levels of,
exactly,
of hierarchy to deal with sort of
course,
the day-to-day
yeah.
operations.
So now the idea is to kind of template that
I want to know about when you opened at Indo and you were building your team there and just putting your vision really into effect. Did any part of you, did you pull back at all, or did you push as far as you wanted to go? And was there any apprehension that maybe St. Louis wasn't necessarily ready for it?
You always have that kind of like St. Louis isn't ready for it kind of vibe. And nowadays, though, because I mean, St. Louis is really has this one thing that like I think is great, which we have a ton of like food media. We have two food magazines, Feast and Sauce. And then we have a pretty great food critic. At least I like him. I like him now. But
he did right by
yeah,
you.
He did so right by me now. Yeah. But now you have this like insurgence of like great food. Like, I mean, in St. Louis, like the weather's not amazing all the time. And, you know, there's not a ton of a crazy stuff to do. So it's like really just like an eating and drinking town, in my opinion, and sports. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah. So for me, I was like, I think I'm kind of over the whole, like, is St. Louis ready? I'm just going to cook what I like really want to cook. And if I only have 46 seats, I'm hoping that that's enough to fill up the restaurant. Maybe not necessarily serving like your expected St. Louis fare and just filling like a huge restaurant, which is, I think, much harder. So for me, it was just about having fun with the food and hopefully letting things trickle down from there and not really taking it too serious, like what our definition is.
I also opened up a restaurant young. You have a much longer pedigree and you have sort of a family support system built in. But from my perspective, I often, when I go into work and I'm think to myself, oh, wow, I'm in charge of all of this, mm-hmm. that can be kind of a daunting thing. I sometimes think to myself, oh, if I would have worked for a couple more people and spent a couple more years doing this at that restaurant and XYZ, maybe I'd be more prepared. And sometimes it's just you got to dive in head first. So I guess my question is, you as a young business owner and in the grand scheme of restaurant ownership, you are fairly young. Do you ever get the feeling that you wish you would have spent a couple more years working for other people, or do you feel super ready? And do you still day to day feel like you made the right decision?
I feel like I made the right decision, mm-hmm. definitely, because I like where I am. I like my job right now a lot, yeah. which is great because, like, you know, I'm getting older and I don't want to be doing anything that I don't want to do. I think that all the time, though. Like, I would really have, honestly, I think about working for other people as much. Like, I think that would have been really fun for me in a way. Like, so, like, my friends from Austin are all working at, like, other cool restaurants now, and I thought, you know, part of me is always like, oh, I could have, you know, we would like, you know, do the whole like roommates and we work at the badass restaurant again. And yeah. like, you know, for a while there it was great. Like we were all really good at what we did and it's fun and like less responsibility, you know, like that line cook lifestyle, I actually do kind of enjoy, like I embrace it a little bit. I think it would have been really great for me as a chef and my food because I would have just gotten better and better and maybe even more rapidly. But I think when you, like you said, like if you're like you start up your restaurant a little bit young, you learn a whole different set of skills, you know, being the one in charge. Like I have to be kind of that trusted like rock for the whole staff. And I'm learning to be the guy who doesn't freak out, you know, and people can look to me and be like, okay, like Nick's here. So everything's going to be okay. You know, something happens with the POS system or something happens in the bathroom or like all these little things is like, stay calm. You know, there's a way to fix this. Like I've learned all these new little things over the years because I was in that position to be a leader instead of just being a line cook. So I think you have a ton of people who are insanely good at cooking and like that I look up to all the time. And it's like, for me now, I'm happy that the skills that I'm learning are keeping me as like a well-rounded, maybe like restaurateur. And I would love to be, you know, like a more successful restaurateur in the future. And cooking and being a chef is like just part of that job. So I'm glad that I'm pretty good at cooking. Of course, if I had worked at some like really great restaurants, I think I could be even better. But I think I'm getting really good at like keeping people happy, you know, keeping the staff happy. Like I think that, and that's kind of like the future of restaurants in my opinion. Like I'm over the whole, like everyone is miserable because they have to do this job. I think restaurants now can be a beautiful career. Like we have fun every day, we work hard every day, and there's a balance to that. And you have, you know, there's certain benefits by working in a restaurant that you could maybe use as like a positive thing, where you have like a lot of people, staff that are sitting there saying like, oh, I wish I had a better job, I work in a restaurant. But it's like, you have flexible schedule, like you can go on 3 vacations a year, you can, you know, you can get off whenever you want, right? As long as you can get it covered, and trying to keep people having fun while they're working, you know, because there's a lot of people who punch the clock at their, you know, their IT job, where maybe they make double the salary, but at the same time, they come to me, like a lot of my friends who aren't in the industry, they come to me and they're like, what are you doing this week, man? It's like, they don't even talk about their job to me, you know? And I think that's kind of cool. So I try to push that, like, almost like creating that little, our little family, and we're happy while we're at work. And then when we're off work, you know, we're happy to do what we can do while we're off. But then at the same time, you don't dread coming into work the next day. You know, you're gonna be like, oh, I'm gonna see Nick, I'm gonna see Hannah and Mark, and we're all gonna kind of make something delicious that night, and then we'll go home. And you know, it's like happy. Everyone's gotta be happy. That's good.
What are your goals with the restaurant? It's pretty fresh. It opened in June, so you're in the first year of being open. Obviously, the critical acclaim from the St. Louis Dispatch, it helped Nippon Tei tremendously. Everybody wants a good review. Mm-hmm. But beyond a positive review and beyond customers coming, what do you hope for your restaurant?
I talk about this a lot, actually, to like the staff. And I think, you know, I'm even more, feel even more strongly about it after kind of walking around New York a little bit. But it's like, I want that restaurant to become kind of that, you know, to kind of immerse itself in that local community, where people are walking to the restaurant and maybe they haven't thought all week about eating at Indo, but they just kind of walk in and they can get a seat and it becomes part of that neighborhood. I really just want it to become part of that neighborhood. Because to me, like, a cool restaurant is a place that people can just kind of count on, you know, like I don't need to feel stressed out about getting a reservation, which maybe right now we're really hot and we're kind of busy and it, you know, you got to make a reservation. But eventually I would love it to kind of get to that point where it feels like, oh yeah, we're just going to go to dinner at Indo real quick, or we're just going to have a bite at Indo and then we're going to go do what we're going to do down the street. I just want it to be like chill and like a place where people can go and feel comfy, you know? So for me, like these neighborhood restaurants, like we were talking about earlier, like places that aren't too serious and yet really serious about the product that they, you know, essentially if I'm taking money for something, I need to be serious about it. Right. So I don't want to like make it lax, but at the same time, I can't wait for it to be a place that's just kind of like, yeah, Indo. We've been there. Like, we go there all the time. We go there once a week, you know, lunch or dinner, whatever.
I want you to talk about one dish. I know it's hard to sum up the entire menu, but if you can kind of break down a dish for us that's on the Indo menu that you think is an awesome representation of the type of food that you like to do there, and whether or not it's harkens back to like your childhood or maybe a traditional dish from a specific country, but like, why did you create it and why does it live on the menu at Indo?
So like, I mean, there's a couple dishes on there that I think are really kind of like dialed. One of the most popular dishes we have is like a hamachi crudo or like a sashimi, basically. We call it the Isan hamachi. So it's like basically just like really kick-ass yellowtail that we treat right, and we do it in the Japanese style, you know, and we break that down in the Japanese style. And that in itself is really good. But what we do that's kind of different is we throw a lot of those flavors from my family or my heritage onto like a really kick-ass sashimi. So it's like fish sauce reduction with like a ton of aromatics mixed with citrus and coconut milk, and that makes like this really kick-ass kind of jus. And then we do some a paste that's based on yuzu kosho, but it's with all Thai ingredients. So it's like Thai basil and chilies and lime zest. And then we put some candied garlic on there, which is something that I got from Uchi, right? So it's kind of like my career, my family's flavors, and at the same time, just like proper Japanese fish technique. I always kind of thought the way the Japanese handle fish is like the best way, like the right way, right? So putting that all together really kind of like sums up me as a chef in a way. And people really dig it. So it's cool. Cause it's like yellowtail crudos can kind of be a ton of different things, and it kind of just, it works out, man. And I'm happy with that dish a lot, cause it's only like 4 really good ingredients. That's what I like too. Like simple, but at the same time, deep with flavor.
Nick, tell everyone when they're in St. Louis, where can they find you at Indo? And also let's drop in the address for Nippon Te as well. And if there's a website that they can go to find all the restaurants, if you could shout that out as well.
Yeah, for sure. So Indo, the new restaurant, we're at indo-stl.com. That's in Botanical Heights in St. Louis, so right next to the Botanical Garden, Tower Grove Avenue. Shouldn't be too hard. There's a bunch of restaurants around right there. It's kind of a new upcoming little area, but you'll find me there most often, like working at the sushi counter. And then Nippon Te, which is kind of our larger sushi bar, the old family restaurant. That's a little bit outside of the city on Manchester Road, 14025 Manchester. And you can find all the website stuff for Nippon and Ramen Te at testl.com.
Cool. Nick, thanks for being here and joining us. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your time in New York.
Thanks, man.
Stuffing yourself and going to try a bunch of new places. Everyone, thanks for listening to this episode. You can find this episode and all the other episodes of The Line wherever you get your podcasts, on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and of course on heritageradionetwork.org. Join us every Tuesday for new episodes of The Line here on Heritage Radio. The Line is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners just like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.